Kedushin, Perek Aleph, Mishnah Hey 1:5. Now our Mishnah talks about how one makes kinyanim on other assets. So assets called nechasim in Mishnah Hebrew can be one of two basic types. Either they can be assets which are real estate, the ground itself, and the structures built on the ground. Those are referred to as nechasim sheyesh lehem achrayos. I'll explain why in a moment. And then you have anything else, essentially, which is like a movable object. I think the technical name for that is chattel. But any chattels, you know, like a hat or a cup or a sofa or a chair, whatever it is, all those things are called nechasim she'ein lehem achrayus. Now, the translation would be assets that don't have responsibility or something like that, as opposed to nechasim she'esh lehem achrayus, real estate, which is property which has responsibility. I'll translate. What this is referring to is that if one takes on any kind of debt, so the creditor automatically has a lien, like an encumbrance, on real estate that the borrower owns, or things that are attached to the ground. And the same goes if, let's say, one marries a woman, he gives her a ksuba. Her ksuba is guaranteed automatically and always by all of his real assets, meaning his property and the stuff which is attached to his property, the structures, etc. So since they are acting as assurance for the payment of the debt he's incurring or the financial obligation he's incurring, they're called nechasim sheyesh lemachrayas. They carry responsibility because what it means is if after he marries the woman and gives her ksuba, he then goes and sells the property that he had at that point. So then if later on when he divorced the woman, if he doesn't have the wherewithal to pay her ksuba payment, she can go to the person who purchased his property, his nechasim sheyesh lemachrayas, and say, listen, I had an encumbrance, a lien, a chrayut, on that property that you bought, and therefore I'm like sort of like the first, like the bank, I'm like the first lien on it, so you now have to essentially liquidate your asset to pay me out on my ksuba. Okay, and that wouldn't be the case when it comes to like a chair or a Maserati or whatever else that, you know, a diamond ring the guy owns. All those things, if he sells them by the time the one wants a claim, or any of the bank wants a claim on him, or a lender wants a claim on him, they don't have a chrayus. The lender cannot go to the person who in the interim purchased the Maserati or the diamond ring, etc. Okay, so that being the case, the Mishnah is going to say that there's different modes of acquisition, different maase kinyanim for nechasim sheyesh lehem achrayus, real estate versus chattels. Okay, so our Mishnah is going to focus on like contrasting the two. So even though there are certain kinds of kinyanim which could work for both, we're not going to focus on that, we're not going to mention that, we're going to mention the modes that only work for one and not the other. So it says, nechasim sheyesh lehem achrayus, real estate, niknin bekesef b'shtar uvachazaka. The three modes that are peculiar and unique to real estate as opposed to movables, and by the same list of three we saw for the Eved Kanani, is kesef, money, something of value, shtar, which is a contract, or chazaka, some sort of proprietary act. And I'll go through them now, each one by themselves. So kesef means the giving of value. This is kind of like the giving of a ring to the woman for marriage, whereas it's not a matter of the amount of money you're giving necessarily being worth the value of the real estate. As long as you give something of value and the seller accepts it, so that affects the transaction, okay? And you'll be on the hook to pay the rest later on. But the point is, you can affect the sale now that it, there's no turning back, and you know, the deed hands over, whatever it is, the rights hand over with any amount of kesef, any amount of money. Now, that's true, but in a society in which people do not sell a property without also, they don't buy property, I should say, without also getting like the deed to the property, a contract proving that it's theirs, so then kesef alone won't work, because for every kinyan, this is really important, for every kinyan throughout the whole of the Masechta and the whole of Kol Tzar Kula, there are two steps. There is the necessary prerequisite. There's a meeting of the minds between the two parties. They're agreeing to make this transaction under whatever given conditions they've agreed to. And then to effect that transaction is the Maase Kinyan, which means, you know, the same way a kiss can't give a ring to a woman and she accepts it, or she's my wife. No, it has to be she's accepting it for the sake of becoming my wife. So too, if I give someone money for their property, it has to be they've agreed to the terms first. And it would go without saying, unless it was said to the contrary, that this sale of the property is not going to be taking place until I get the deed. So that went without saying, and therefore wouldn't, in such a society, you'd need to have a deed or contract along with the money. The second case is the shtar. Shtar is a contract, which basically is like a deed saying you now own the farm. And when you get that deed, it's transferred over to you, the new buyer. Again, here, this is assuming that a person's accepting making a gift or something. But if it's actual sale, so then under normal circumstances, a person would not agree to give away the farm until they first get paid in full, and therefore, shtar loans aren't good enough. For a sale, you need to have the full payment as well. So yes, that means when you're using shtar, full payment would be required, because that's the normal assumption a person's using in terms of what he would normally do. Whereas if you're using kesef, it's sort of a symbolic act, and even not the full payment could work if you're doing it for the sake of affecting the transaction. And finally, uva chazaka, with some kind of act which shows ownership. So kind of like the same way when it came to the eved, the slave, the chazaka was, making the slave do something which only an owner would have it done for him, like do his shoes or carrying him on his back or something. Same goes with chazaka for a real estate. It means that in the presence of the seller, the buyer changes the locks or puts up a fence or digs a hole or something. So, of course, the previous owner would never let that happen in front of him unless the person who's doing the changing of the locks or building the fence, whatever the story is the new owner. So that act shows he's the new owner because no one else besides him would be allowed to build a fence and the like. Okay. In contrast, the she'ein le'machrayus, when it comes to property that doesn't have a chrayus, meaning all chattels, all movables, ein niknin ela b'mashicha. You have to actually take the item. Now, mashicha here in our Mishnah doesn't mean literally to make it move like it did in the previous Mishnah when it came to livestock. You don't easily make necessarily, a sofa move, but you have to take the sofa. So that means either, yes, drag it or pick it or, of course, lifting it up, hagba, would be okay. But the point is, if you're buying something from me, it has to get into your hand before it's yours. Okay? Meaning that kesef money doesn't work. And that's super important to understand. Meaning just because you pay the money for the hat doesn't mean it's yours. You have to take the hat. And that's the point of our Mishnah here. Now, there's a very important machlokas that lurks essentially the Kol Torah Kula between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, whether Mido Oraisa kesef works as a Maisa Kinyan to affect the transfer of ownership of movable objects, and just the rabbi said no or not. So according to Rish Lakish, it just simply doesn't work. Cash isn't a way to affect the transaction for movables. According to Rabbi Yochanan, it really is a way, midoraisa, but the rabbi said no. The rabbi said it shouldn't work because there's concern that if a person would essentially take money but not deliver the object, so then let's say, I'm selling you all my hats in my hat factory, and now I get the money, and now if a fire breaks out in the hat factory, I'm not going to bother to save your hats, because I'll say, listen, they're your hats, deal with it yourself, and you never took possession of them, so you're going to get messed up. So the rabbis therefore said, listen, until the actual object is delivered, it's not, the sale hasn't happened. Now, while that's true, I should point out that if a person, pays for something, and then they back out. They say, listen, I didn't require the hat yet. I didn't take the hat, so I want my money back, essentially. I'm not agreeing to this after all. So while that is something that he could do, technically, he faces sort of a curse of the rabbis called Misha Para. That's like the phrase, which means he who took retribution. But the full phrase is Misha Para Ma'anshe Dor HaMabul, the person who took retribution against the men of the generation of the flood. Umador HaFlaga, and the generation of the dispersion, the Tower of Babel generation, who asil li pare mimi she'eno omed b'diburo, he will also take retribution against the person who doesn't stand by his word. So you're not allowed to do that, but it technically could work. Okay, fine. In any case, the point here is, when it comes to movables, kesef, shtar, chazaka don't work, and so you have to take the object itself. Now, that being the case, the Mishnah says still, there's a way you can sort of bundle these together, because nechasim she'ein le'machrayas niknin im nechasim she'esh le'machrayas. If you're doing a transaction in which you're transferring both real estate and the chattels together, that can work, and that can work because of uvishtar v'chazaka, by the normal modes by which you acquire real estate. Meaning, if I'm selling you my farm and my tractor, even if the tractor is on the other side of town, if I do an act which sells you the farm, kesef, shtar, chazaka, so I can say you're also acquiring not just the farm, but the tractor, which is on the other side of town in the shop, okay? And when you get the shtar or the money for the farm, the tractor immediately becomes yours. That's called a kinyan agav. Agav means on the back of, meaning it's an acquisition of the chattels, the movables, on the back of, literally, the real estate, which is being acquired. Okay, it doesn't work the other way around, meaning if I sell you my tractor and you drive off with it and it becomes yours, you can't also make a Kenyan Agav to also own the farm. But if you get the farm, you can get the tractor with it. Okay. On the other hand, there's another thing here. Now, this next sentence has nothing to do with Kenyanim Shrutas. It has to do with something called a Gilgul Shvua. A Shvua is an oath that one takes in the courts. And Gilgul means like to roll on. So that like a Galgalim in Hebrew is a wheel, to roll on. So the idea is that there are certain scenarios where the Torah allows a person to demand that his adversary in the court swear. So there's two basic cases of that. One is what's called a modu b'miktzas. If I say, you owe me $100, you say, no, I just owe you $50. So I can't make you pay me more than $50, but I can force you to swear that you don't owe me the other $50. Okay? That's called modu b'miktzas. As opposed to if I say, you owe me $100, you say, I owe you nothing. Then if I have no witnesses, then I can do nothing. Okay, not even force you to take a shvua. The other way is what's called an eid echad. If I have one witness, so I have one witness that says, you owe me $100, and you deny it, well, I'll never be able to make you pay the $100, but I can at least force you to say, under oath, to swear that you don't owe me the money, because I have one witness saying you do. And once you take that shvua, you get to keep the money that I'm claiming. If you refuse to take the oath, then I can get it. Okay? So, the point is, one doesn't take a shvua on land. I can't, if I say you owe me the farm, and you say, no, I don't, even if you would say, well, I sold you half the farm, so there's the modu b'miktzas, if you will, that can't allow me to make a shvua on you, because you don't take an oath, you don't swear on real estate. But if I say, I sold you, two tractors and the farm, and you say, no, it was just one tractor and no farm, since your modu b'miktzas on the tractors, you admit for partial of the tractors, and I can make you take a shvua on the tractor part of it, so I can now do be megalgel, I can roll onto you a gilgul shvua and say, once you're swearing about the tractor, I demand that you swear about the farm as well, and then I can force to take a shvua on the farm. So that's the point of our mission over here, that the zokin nechasim she'en lemachrayas, zokin is like to obligate, obligate, kind of like the, I'll tell you two uses of the word. One is in Yibum, when a person dies, when a man dies, no children, so his wife has a zika, she's a zakuk to her brother-in-law, like she's obligated to deal with him first before she can marry someone else. And the Gemara says when it comes to like your Hanukkah candles, it asks if your Hanukkah candles burn out before the half an hour is up, that you have to light them, are you zakuk to them? Do you have to relight them? So zakuk is obligated. So v'zokin nechasim she'en lemachrayas, you're obligated, you can obligate by means of property that has no responsibility, meaning chattels, movable objects, they can obligate as an achasim sheish lemachrayas lishava alehen. They can obligate one to take an oath to swear about property which is real estate that has achrayas through the mechanism as described before called gilgul shvua. Once you're swearing on the movables, I can force you to swear at the same time about the non-movable real estate as well.